Blog Talk Radio.
With your Curiosity Media, changing the world you listen to. The views and opinions of this show do not reflect the views and opinions of Wikicuriosity Media or its affiliates.
let them all have it. And many came before, but few can truly match us. If you play with high five, you get burnt from the matches. Murder everything I spit, body bag in a casket. Premeditate the whole killing, homie, I'm just that sick. No masking, take this mind, I ain't asking. Fuck fashion, no swag, no classing. Crashing, any motherfucking beat. And I'm a freestyle phenomenon, I'm a motherfucking beast. When it comes to this music game and everything in me, solid with the business plan, like you always supposed to be. Ain't no fuck shit from no dumb bitch. Get to dumping quick with that dumb spin. Yeah, throw me to the double, baby. Looking for some trouble, baby. Punch you dead up in your mouth. Crying like some fucking ladies. Just a product of the 80s. Glass pipes, crack babies. Living like me crazy. That bullshit just a waste. Rougher than a gravel road. Sharp rocks and potholes. Attitude all fucked up. He a real asshole. Well, fuck how they be feeling. Cause you dealing with a villain that lyrically be killing anyone that's in their feelings. Yeah, rats that he be swilling. Just the body's sad and cheering. Keep the door with the flowing like he burning down the building. My barbecue and grill. I'm detrimental when I'm yelling, like he's dropping in the ceiling, just waiting for the drilling. No remorse for how they build them, talk like pussies when I kill them. Bad hand is what I deal him, you won't work them, I'm just chilling. You fucking with the real men, beat you bad like you've been stealing. Trying to match up with the skill, when you lacking what I'm feeling, huh? Back at it, 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 back at it. Back at it, 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 back at it. So pass the box and take it to the face. The straight shooter, man, and I don't need a day. Multiple shots, yeah, till they disintegrate. Playing like I'm being great, homie, I don't need the chase. Flights out of town, landing in a different state. Flying 80 plus while I'm mobbing down the interstate. Hold on, grab the mic and then I'll rock the stage. That's what I came for. Don't you forget the name. He's Alaska Red from the very tippy top of this. Not no metropolis. Bring the hip hop in this. Ain't no stopping this. Non-stop rocking shit. No matching how he grind. Boy, you can't knock his spit. Colder with the flow, and you can tell me from the polar bit. Yeah, Ari to the dub, baby, hard etiquette. From the 907, colder than a fucking witch's kit. In a brass bra, I bet you could relate to this.
Open eyes, closed mouth. Whatever you know about, you don't know about. Yeah, me and mine on a low key. I don't know you, you don't know me. Green's for the money, honey's for the bees. Hit a suck it easy until your brain freeze. I'm cooler than a space camcorder. They say I'm dope man, goes to Rich Porter. Insubordinate, I don't take orders. Making noise for the game, can't ignore it. Never mistake the trees for the forest. Pin the tail on the donkey till it's hoarse. Always make sure your dollars stack north. And never plot on mine to get yours. I'm cooler than a space camcorder. They say I'm dope man, goes to Rich Porter. Insubordinate, I don't take orders. Making noise for the game, can't ignore it. Never mistake the trees for the forest. Pin the tail on the donkey till it's hoarse. Always make sure your dollars stack north. And never plot on mine to get yours.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Note by Note Radio Show. It is I, your host, the guy in glasses, and we have Andy on the line with us tonight.
Hey, what's up, y'all? This is Andy Remax Moreno representing Olympia, Washington.
Hey, what's up, Jesse? Don't forget about this guy over here. Where's my intro, J Boogie? I need my intro, bro. I need my theme music. What's going on? I think I lost my goals. J Boogie, where you at? Well, it's your boy Jesse Lives coming to you live from San Jose, California. How y'all doing today? We had a little technical difficulties this morning, but we good to go. We got my boy Andy on the fucking radio show. See, when I met the guy, he was known as Cap City Andy, but now he's just Andy Remax. He's done grew up into bigger, better things. But hey, I got my guy on the line.
I'm still DIY at heart, man.
Oh, you still? I know, but hey, we got to give the roses where the roses deserve to be given. You see what I'm saying?
I feel it.
And I don't know if anybody read my Facebook post. I don't know if anybody cares about my Facebook, but this is definitely one of my favorite promoters to reach out to when I decide to go on tour. Really cool, down-to-earth, realistic men of the industry, and I don't meet too many of them. That's why I wanted him on this show so we can talk about the angle of especially – for independent artists, the proper way to approach a very good promoter and why I guarantee 99.9% of the promoters don't fuck with you because you don't actually approach them the correct way. And so maybe on this episode, we can help you make Andy's life easier when you're approaching him asking for shit like he owes you a favor. And it's funny I say that because I'm dead ass serious, but it's just funny to say it out loud. So first things first, man. How you been? How's life? How's Roxy? And all that good stuff.
Shout out Roxy. I know she's listening to this. She's going to be stoked to hear her name on this. Life's good, man. I'm doing full-time booking for a company called McMenamins, and I don't know if you're familiar with McMenamins, but they're a brewing company. Well, they started out as a brewery who eventually started opening up hotels. They restore old buildings, and they also restore old, like, venues, too. And I book for four venues for McMenamins. And, yeah, they have over 50 locations total. Damn. Yeah. But, yeah, I do booking for, like, four of them. I've been doing that for a little over a year. Other than that, it's been mostly life with, you know, Roxy and my dog, Honey, who's sitting next to me on the couch here.
Hey, Honey. I'm corny. Don't mind me.
No doubt. But yeah, life's good. I mean, I really can't complain much. I've got my dream job. It took 10 years to get it, but I'm here.
Hey, I guess that's the perennial paying of your dues, paying off, I guess.
I mean, they do say that an overnight success takes 10 years, so, I mean, I just needed to stay persistent.
Yeah, that is very true. And whoever made that up deserves to be punched in the face very hard. But that's a whole other discussion. But yeah, so give us a little bit of background about, you know, how you took the, I guess, fell into the promoter path and made a career of it.
I guess we'll just start from the beginning. It would have been 2012. I was a rapper at the time, and nobody wanted to book me on shows. So I just decided, well, why don't I just contact the venues myself and then book my own shows? It just became a snowball effect where these, you know, artists were hitting me up like, yo, can I get on your shows? And then bands were hitting me up like, yo, can you set up a show for me because I don't know how to do it? And then it sort of snowballed into touring artists and bands hitting me up saying, hey, we heard that you throw shows in Olympia. Can you help us out? And, you know, it just continued further and further there. Truth be told, I'm not really an artist anymore. Like, I found my role in the music industry, and I found that I'm really good at organizational skills that a lot of people aren't very good at. So I'm very good at contacting a venue, talking deals, talking numbers, percentages, and just, yeah, I'm good at coordinating, you know, groups of people. A lot of people say that booking shows is a lot like herding cats, and I'm very, very good at that.
That's a different way of putting it. But now that you say it, that makes a whole lot of sense, man. Before we really get too neck deep in the show, our show
check.
Has rules.
Jesse, can you hear me?
Oh, how you doing, Jay Boogie?
Okay, Jesus. Good Lord.
Jay Boogie, meet Andy Remix. Andy Remix, meet Jay Boogie. This
hey,
is my
Andy,
call.
Man, sorry, buddy. I don't know. I'm having technical issues and systems trying to update and everything like that, and everything's just going haywire. I do apologize, you know. Should have made sure all that was done. I just running late getting here from work today, so didn't have time to do my normal setup.
Oh, good. I was just in the middle of giving him the spiel on the Note by Note radio show rules.
Right.
And so basically, the rules here are, there ain't no damn rules. So whatever you want to share, and because this whole show is built on being a safe space for especially independent artists. Because I feel like, and we feel like, I know from my perspective as an artist, there's a lot of conversations that we're afraid to have, usually because, especially as artists, we like to try to hide information from each other because we feel like it gives ourselves a leg up and things like that. But it's, especially when you're starting out, it's hard to figure out what's the right way to go about things and what's the wrong way to go about things because you don't know who's full of shit and who's genuine.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what we've tried to turn this platform into. So anything that you truly want to share from your expertise based on what you do, feel free to do so. Because that's what we're trying to do here or trying to build here. So, yeah, not that you needed it because you're a really mellow guy, but just in case. So just wanted to put that out there. where should we start? So I guess we'll say this. As a very accomplished promoter, what would be the perfect way to say, hey, I'm trying to come to your city. I would like to work with you. What do you need from me to even be a prospect of, you know, someone you would actually be willing to put on a show for?
I feel like I have a leg up because I'm not just a promoter. I'm also a talent buyer full time, and then I'm also a booking agent. So I guess the best way to go about hitting me up is keep your email short. That is what I appreciate. Also, email is the most preferred method. So let's start there. Email is the most preferred method. Don't hit me up in my DM saying, hey, I want to book a show. But also, if you're going to structure an email, the easiest way to do it, 4 sentences. Hello, my name is blank. I'm an artist on tour from blank. I'm looking to play your city on insert date here. Do you have it available? And, you know, below are my links. Let me know what you think. Thank you. And also, try to include a Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, anything to make yourself sellable, because there are a lot of independent artists, and I'm not trying to knock them because everybody has to start somewhere, but, you know, if I'm looking at a Facebook and it hasn't been, if there's no content, you know, for the past year that's been posted and you only have, like, you know, 60 to 100 likes, you know, what has me inclined to think that you're actually serious about it? Yeah, I guess we'll start there. Like, that's the easiest way to really approach a promoter or a talent buyer or a booking agent and ask, hey, I'm asking a favor of you, but you need to make it worth my time as well.
Now, I really hope that you take this man, what he just gave you word for word, because that is probably one of the biggest cheat codes you will ever get to booking something out of town with anyone. And usually, no knock to no one else, but this is something someone would try to charge you for before they would tell you. They probably wouldn't tell you the whole version of it.
It's all about professionalism. So, and also, another thing that I actually forgot to mention in here, an EPK or an electronic press kit can go a long ways as well on top of, you know, all your socials. And to explain what an electronic press kit is, it's basically a one sheet, whereas it's usually 99% of the time, it's a PDF file that you send to either a talent buyer, a booking agent, or a promoter, somebody like me, and it basically, you know, it has your socials on it. It basically gives me a bio that says, like, here's my life story. You don't want to enter your life story into the email. You want it on your electronic press kit so that I can look at it and I can say, oh, this person is serious about what they do.
And also, even after you do all of that, please understand that this – well, I'm going to speak in terms of Andy. Andy, as well as people like Andy, are still not obligated to book you.
Exactly.
Because I feel like a lot of artists feel like they're doing the promoter a favor. And I know for me, that's always helped me, because I've never been that guy. So I usually would wait for especially after I – so here's another cheat code I'll give you as an artist. I would wait for a promoter to talk about how artists are assholes, but then to reach out to them to book a date because I know they get so burnt out about it and they're tired of hearing the opposite of what Andy just said. So the entitlement that we have as artists, you really have to throw that out of the window, because none of these talent buyers, none of these bookers, they don't owe you anything. You actually need them. They don't need you. And that's what I wanted to express in this show. So with saying that, now let's flip this coin on its tails and say, what is the worst way to reach out to you? Or that, and we'll use this. Actually, let's, without saying names, let's actually talk about things that you've actually experienced in reaching out to you.
I guess the biggest pet peeves that I could go with include people not only sliding in my DMs, which, I mean, it happens from time to time, and I usually give people my email and say, hey, please email me. You know, it's just easier to keep track of. I used to be an all-messenger guy, and then, you know, I grew up at some time. So there's that. But I think the biggest pet peeve is when I get an email that says, hello, I am looking to book a show. Can you help me? No links, just that sentence. Just like, hey, I'm interested in booking a show. Like, so? Like, do you think you're special because you're looking to perform? I don't know. Like, that's my biggest pet peeve. Or when it's just like a whole life story. Like, if you don't put your bio, like, in your EPK, it's just like, hello, I am very interested in being booked by you, and here is my life story, and blah, 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 blah. And then I'm halfway reading through this, and I'm like, I don't know anything about you. You didn't say what genre you are. You know, you didn't say if you're an agent or if you're the drummer of the band, you know, et cetera, et cetera. I feel like lack of detail is very – like I said, like 4 to 5 sentences is preferred, but lack of information is also a pet peeve of mine as well.
Okay, so I hope you guys got your notepads out. Understand he does not want to hear your life story. He wants to hear about you as an artist and what you're trying to accomplish, what you have accomplished.
And what you can bring to the table.
Correct. And it's crazy that we even have to speak on that because you would think that we would have, as artists, we would have evolved past that by now. But
I feel like
everybody's young.
I feel like everybody's young, and people will make those mistakes. It took me, you know, however many years to get over my hurdles and all that. I mean, people got to start somewhere, and if you make those mistakes, just learn from them. Like, that's the best advice I can give. Learn from your mistakes, learn from other people's mistakes, and, you know, keep striving.
True indeed. And all in all, if the booker does not book you, please do not badmouth them. I'll say one of my pet peeves is when artists do go and publicly bash booking agents or promoters, because it's like this. If you burn out a market, you don't realize that you're hurting all of us as artists. And so you got to be very careful, because I think it's a very it's an ecosystem.
Exactly.
And I feel like we as artists don't – now tell me if you agree or disagree, but I feel like at times we as artists, we don't protect the ecosystem that is the – we need to tour somewhere. We need venues to perform in, and there's only so many people who legitimately do it. And we'll take, like, if one little thing that we deem goes wrong or we feel like we were slighted, we want to basically out that person on Facebook or wherever for whatever reason. And I feel like, I don't know why, but I just feel like that really kills us. That kills us all, because then you would be less likely to maybe book me because of your experience with the last person before me.
Right. Or in another aspect, it not only hurts, like, let's say the artist, you know, badmouths me because I didn't want to book them. Not only does that leave a bad taste in my mouth, I can now go to any talent buyer and say, hey, don't book that guy. I don't like him. Or I don't like that band, you know, don't book them. Because talent buyers talk to each other. You know, I'm the talent buyer at Spanish Ballroom in Tacoma. And, you know, I'm going to shout out, you know, Dan Rankin, Dano, Ian Cheshire, Ken Flash Connell. Nathan from Alma, you know, we talk to each other, you know, we'll say like, hey, you know, just like the prime example is like, if a touring band hits me up and I say, oh, we don't have that date available, but I can send you over to, you know, Dano, or I can send you over to Flash and see if they can, you know, help you out with a show. But it's also really easy for me to say, hey, this dude badmouthed me, or, you know, the bassist in this band did X, you know, something bad, don't book them. You know, it just takes one text for me to basically blacklist a band, which is not what I want to do. But if you're gonna badmouth me, then it, yeah, like you said, it hurts the whole ecosystem.
Now, Jesse,
once again, go ahead.
Question.
I'm listening.
On the flip side of things, and I know this show's about Andy and everything like that, but on the flip side of things, have you dealt with an a-hole promoter, booker?
Yeah. There's plenty of them. But those, in my opinion, those people aren't who they say they are. You understand what I'm saying? So there is a lot, because it's not. Now I'm gonna say this, but there's context to it. It's not hard on a show, but that does not make you a promoter, a booker, or a talent buyer. But anyone who knows, because there's a technique to everything. Anyone who knows how to put on a show or to book a venue can do it. But that doesn't mean you know what you're doing. You see what I'm saying?
Amen.
So, but I was blessed that I had certain levels of mentorship when I was, you know, coming up through the ranks. So I got to watch guys who I would call my big brothers, I got to watch how they maneuvered. So even when things went bad, I watched how they handled their business. And so for me, I'm just personally not going to deal with you no more, because I look at it as that door is closed. I don't need to go that way anymore. So I think we as artists, we spend so much time looking backwards and wanting to put people on blast, not realizing it's a waste of time, because I'm about winning. So that's who I want to work with. That's who I want to be around. So, and it's regardless of what the promoter does, it's still on you to make the show work. Like, for example, the last time actually Andy booked an event for me, there was a local act that was supposed to come on. And at the last minute, this guy just disappears. And something happened that was weird, where the times got mixed up and there was a band on before us and so on and so forth. Now, that had nothing to do with Andy. Like, Andy can't control what the venue does, and Andy can't control what the people that he gives opportunities, what they do with those opportunities. Now, I could have took that and turned that into a whole shit show. No, we went in, we did our show. The people who wanted to come out and see us came out and seen us, and we did what we did. I thanked Andy and Roxy, and we went on to the next fucking city. You see what I'm saying? So there's a certain point where some of this is your responsibility too as an artist, because that's your business to run. And we're so busy blaming everyone else that I don't care if it's a good promoter or a bad promoter. If it's a good promoter, I'm going to work with them. I'm going to, like, this is why I have Andy on the show, because this is a promoter that, like, he could have easily told me, like, hey, bro, no, I don't have time for that. You see what I'm saying? But that's not what he did. And he's always shown me, like, he's always shown me love in just the respect of, this is what I can do for you, Jesse. This is what I can't do. You see what I'm saying? But then I've had other guys that it's just like, yeah, I don't know what this is, but it's still on me to make it work, if that makes sense. So that's just me. I don't know about other artists, but that's how I look at it. No matter how effed up the scenario is, it's still on me to make it go at the end of the day.
Well said. Yeah, it's about keeping a positive note for one, and then two, taking responsibility for your actions. I think I remember what had happened, though, at LaVoyer. I don't exactly know why it happened this way, but I remember you had hit me up, and I was like, hey, I'm throwing a show at the Pig Bar that night, but here is LaVoyer's email. And I think you had talked to them, and they must told you, like,
well.
Yeah, I think what had happened, if I'm not mistaken, I mean, this was 2019, 2018, maybe? LaVoyer. LaVoyer does two shows a night, and it's 6 to 10 and then 10 to 1. And I think they had told you that you had the all-ages slot, but they actually meant the 21 and up. And, yeah, that's what happened.
Right, but that was nothing on Andy. That was my point. That was nothing on him. Like, I had to make it work. No matter what happened, we had to still go in and do and set up and break down and do what we needed to do. Regardless, it was, and even on the fact of hitting the people who did buy tickets to the show, hitting those people up and letting them know the time had been changed. And that's because what I feel like is a lot of artists don't realize this is your business. That's how I look at it. That part, when you're touring and things like that, that part is your business. It wins or it loses or it fails with you. So those people spent money to come see you. So let's just say the promoter is horrible. Let's say all of it's horrible. There's no sound guy. It just all goes wrong. That's still on you or whoever the road manager is, if that's you or someone else, to make that go. Like, and if you don't have those people with you, maybe you're not ready to be on the road. And that's just a hard truth that you may have to look in the mirror. But for me, when I'm touring, the package I bring with me, we're ready for any contingency. We're ready to go. Even if we have to go rent a whole sound system that day before the show, if that's what I got to fucking do, hey, I guess I got to take this loss. That's what I got to do. Because that's what's expected, and that's what the people who will buy a ticket to come see me deserve. And that's nobody's fault if it goes bad but my own. So I don't Now I'm saying this is just me. This is my opinion. This is how I feel. I can't speak for anyone else. I can't care with anyone else where anyone else feels short. I got to make it work. I got to pick up those pieces. And that's just how I was taught the business, especially if I want to call myself a touring artist or just in the business of music. How else can you be on the road and be blaming other people because certain things didn't work? Should I bring my own mics? I'll bring my own DJ. Like, I'll bring whatever I need to bring. And I'm sorry, it could be 15 minutes before we go on. We'll figure it out. That's just, I think that's just what you should do, and that's what you have to do. And I think that's what will earn you respect from the people who are doing what they're supposed to be doing. Because there is a lot of imposters, don't get me wrong, especially in the hip-hop side. There's a lot of people that are just vultures and just in it for the money, and they're just fucking scam artists because they've been able to get away with it, and they can use social, they can hide behind social media, and it's a lot of he said, she said, but there's guys that have built a career on that. But even in that, the professionalism is always going to reign supreme because it's always going to come out in the wash who's who. And like Andy said, like, there's only a few of us, like a handful of us who have done this the correct way. We all talk. So it's easy for me to say, yeah, don't F with him. I wouldn't F with him. Or there's the flip side of that, like, I'll say, okay, I'm going to introduce you to Andy, but you treat Andy nice because that's my guy, and don't mess up my relationship with Andy with your shenanigans. Because there's that too. And because like I said, it's a real ecosystem, and I've watched people burn out markets with their own selfish, greedy ways. I mean, let's flip this around to the artist side. Like, there's artists who will go in and have a guarantee from a talent buyer or a booking agent, and the show will flop, right? But they'll still insist on getting paid, right? Not realizing, like, yeah, you got your money, but what you did was you put that guy in a hole. Now he can't book the next artist. So what did you do? You're so selfish, you burnt out that city now. So now let's say for hip-hop, like, we do this as rappers. Now, I don't know what other guys do, but rappers – there's a lot of rappers that do that shit. And not realizing when you do that, if you do that to an Andy, you're hurting me. Because now Andy might not be able to afford to book me. Right? So there's a lot that happens behind the scenes that I guess those of us who are professional that we know. And but it would never be something I'm trying to run to Facebook and – like, the whole being able to run the Facebook and tattletale is some of the worst shit. It's like the worst shit ever, because you just, to me, that just makes you the biggest fucking crybaby in my book. Like, if you can't handle it man to man and you can't handle it like a businessman, then those are the people I believe deserve to be blackballed, if there's such a thing. Because I don't understand what it's worth, because now we're just taking shots at people. And that may not even be the whole story, because a lot of times the people who run the Facebook and tattletale the most are telling half the story. And that's only and it's usually the version that benefits them the most. They won't tell how they've been fucking this guy, you know, out of $1,000 or $500 a show for the last 3 years. You know, it'll be the one time that guy finally just stands up and tells them no.
Also, another thing to note, though, when you say things like, when the talent buyer guarantees you X amount and the show flops, that's the job of the talent buyer. That's to pay that out. If there was a contract involved, I personally, you know, I've managed to not burn bridges because I'm a man of my word. I've managed to pay, right. Even if it was late, I've done my part to, you know, make things right. You know, there have been times where I guarantee, you know, 500 and, you know, I only have 400 and I say, look, you know, give me a week, you know, I'll PayPal it to you. Sorry about that. You know, it's about, and don't set unrealistic goals and just be on as honest as possible. I think that's another thing that, you know, you were asking about, like, what are the worst things that an artist can do? You know, an artist can say, oh, I can bring out 150 people. And then they bring out, you know, 20. And it's like, well, you know, that sucks. But also, it is on the talent buyer to pay up if there was a contract involved.
Very true. But like you said, there's a way of going about it. There's the proper way of going about it, and then there's the messy way of going about it. And,
yeah.
And I'll say in as rappers, because, I mean, I can't really call that hip-hop. As rappers, we tend to lean towards the messy side of going about business. And it just sucks for me because it's just like, okay, I don't want to get – now, once again, this is just my opinion. I'm speaking for myself. I just at times have really hated being grouped into that because then it's almost like all rappers are the same. And I fell victim to that at times, you know, when I was touring. So mm-hmm. it's different when you think about it, but I think there's a lot of things that go on behind the scenes that are pretty messy. But I try to steer clear. I try to steer clear of the messiness. I mean, because there's a lot of things that I can personally say, like there's a lot of times that I haven't told my side of the story and I really don't care to.
For sure.
Did we lose you, Jay Boogie? You still on with us? He might be having technical difficulties. So let's.
I haven't switched to my phone.
Oh, you switched it.
Yeah,
that was my question.
Move stuff around the house real quick. I'm still here though.
Okay, so let's throw on a song or two, and then we'll come back and we'll dive back into this and see what other gems we can dig up. We cool with that? We good with that?
Yeah, I'm good with that.
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, so I think we're going to get into some Air Max the moment here on the No By No Radio Show. We'll be right back with Andy Remix. Stay tuned.
Human state. My emotional prison has got me doing things like building barriers yeah. Exploring all these different rooms, hand on my different hues, colors bloom, colors bloom. Exploring all these different rooms, hand on my different hues, colors bloom, colors bloom. Some days feel good, some days feel low, some days I feel like I just don't know. I let the colors flow, let the colors flow, yeah. I was once told, like the canvas though, through all of the madness I do so, let it mold. Over time we hold, greatest gift that you hold will be your own, yeah. Exploring all these different rooms, hand on my different hues, colors bloom, colors bloom. Exploring all these different rooms, hand on my different hues, colors bloom, colors bloom. Fluently flowing through time and space, let the colors illuminate and trace through grace. I see and embrace everything I be. Ain't always beautiful to see, but beautiful in me. Take and weave red broken dreams, lemon squeeze. Feel the ocean breeze, only guarantee. Eyes are forever changing, changing. Exploring all these different rooms, hand on my different hues, life and color, ooh, life and color, ooh. Exploring all these different rooms, hand on my different hues, life and color, ooh, life and color, ooh. Exploring all these different rooms, hand on my different hues, life and color, ooh. Life and color, ooh.
But there is this undamaged essence in all human beings that has compassion naturally. That as we go through life, slings and arrows have a way of forcing these parts out of their naturally valuable states into protective roles that can close our hearts. And so a lot of the work is designed to help find the parts that are obscuring the self and help them trust it's safe to open space for it. As these parts start to trust that,
yeah,
and self emerges, it's like this new person comes out and knows how to heal these parts. It actually takes over sessions and starts to do this internal work of actually listening with respect to parts that had plagued them all their lives.
Welcome back to the Nobody No Radio Show. That was Air Max the Moment, and just now you heard Moon Magic Colors. If you are wondering who those dope artists were, those are two very dope artists in my opinion, and this is Jesse Lives, and we are live on the air with Andy Remax and J Boogie.
Talking about booking and touring and things of that sort. And so, one question I want to ask you, Andy. So what is the difference between a booking agent, a talent buyer, and a promoter?
Let's start with the talent buyer, because it's simpler to explain that a talent buyer works for a specific company, and they, what their job is what it sounds like. It's to buy talent. It's to discuss percentages, you know, overhead costs for the venue, how much potential money could be made. So a talent buyer, like, I'm just going to use me as a prime example. I work for a company called McMenamins. They hired me to book, you know, at four different locations: the Olympic Club in Centralia, Kalama Harbor Lodge in Kalama, Spanish Ballroom in Tacoma, and McMenamins Anderson School in Bothell. So my job is to buy talent for those specific four venues. Now, as a promoter, my job is to be contacted by or I could do the contacting, but it's most of the time it's usually a touring artist that contacts me and says, "Hi, I'm on tour from California, and I'm looking for a show on this date in Olympia. can you assist me? And then my job as the promoter is to first off say yes or no. If I say yes, I contact the venue. I find, you know, if the venue is available, then it's my job to find, you know, a local supporting act, you know, whether that be two bands to sandwich the touring band in between, or, you know, if it's a hip hop show, you know, we can do like five artists on a bill. So we do two openers, touring act in the middle, two local openers to headline to keep a local crowd in. You know, and as a promoter, it's also my job to promote the show, which I do on, you know, Facebook and Instagram and Twitter. And I also hang flyers around Olympia to, you know, let the people who don't have social media know. As a booking agent, a booking agent's job is to essentially find somebody a gig outside of their hometown, or even in their hometown in some cases, but it's not as lucrative to hire me. If you say like, hey, I really want to show in Olympia, you're better off just doing it yourself, honestly. But as a booking agent, I usually get contacted by a band or an artist that says, hey, I'm looking to go on tour. These are the dates that I'm looking for. I, you know, I'm just using this as an example. Like, say it's an Olympia band. As a booking agent, my job is to find them shows outside of Olympia and route them back home. So they could say, hey, we're looking to go on tour from February 17th through the 28th, and we're trying to go down to California. So it's my job to, you know, route the tour basically in, you know, it's a lot of studying maps. That's actually what I did during the shutdowns. I was bored out of my mind because I couldn't book shows. So I was like, well, how can I get ahead of the game? And I studied the map of Washington and Oregon and Idaho until my eyeballs fell out. So my job is, you know, essentially to, you know, start from Olympia. You can go down to Portland, then you can go down to Eugene, then to Medford, then to Ashland. And then, you know, on your way back up, you can hit, you know, Scappoose, and you can hit the Dalles or Hood River. And you can even go as far east as Yakima and, you know, upwards to Spokane, and then head back east, or head back west, and then that'll get you home. Maybe I rambled a little bit. The booking agent's job is to basically route a tour. Yeah, and also the booking agent's job is to send out emails, and it's tedious. It's not as easy as, oh, I just need to hit up this one venue and hope that they reply. Or, you know, and they'll reply. It's more of, I'm hitting up 100 venues in one market, and I'm not getting a response from 98% of them. It's a lot of phone calls. It's a lot of wait. It's just a waiting game. And you have to be really patient, and that's why a lot of people really don't make it when they try to do this. It takes a lot of patience. I've met so many promoters or business owners or just, you know, mainly promoters that do it because they think it's a get-rich-quick scheme. But people won't just go to a show just because a show is happening.
Right.
Very
exactly.
True. Very
just
true.
Because your name is on a poster. Oh, go ahead.
Listen, go ahead. Continue. No, continue.
Oh, okay. Just because your name is on a poster, it does not mean people will show up.
Exactly.
Yeah, and that is the truest. And I'm so glad you said that, because I've booked and routed my own. So I've actually every tour that I've headlined, I booked and routed it. And I really want you guys to understand, like, that is not a game. That is not for the faint of heart. And you definitely got to be in it to win it. So if you are blessed enough to have someone that you can hire that understands that, you are very lucky. For me, I was just put in the position where, you know, I had to do it for myself, which was a blessing to me because I learned how to do it. But these are the things when people say, I want to go on tour, they truly don't understand, like, just the routing of a tour itself. It's its own monster within itself, because the routing of a tour will literally make or break it in a lot of ways, because
there's the routing of the tour, there's the budgeting of the route, there's the just all those things, and that I'm not giving away to no one because fuck that. I earned that to know that and kiss my ass, and Andy earned that to know that and kiss his ass. But there's so much that goes into that part of the tour that it's bigger than just going on tour. And that's where you would want to pay someone like Andy. I don't even know if I'd want to take that on for someone else, so I don't know if you could fucking pay me to do it for you. But that is very important when you, especially when you're first starting out, it would behoove you to pay someone to route your tour or to buy on with an act that's already touring so you can see it happen firsthand, because touring is not something you can just jump out there and jump into, because you can bankrupt yourself by just routing your tour ass backwards. And I've seen tours that don't make no sense of the routing, but hey, that's their tour, not mine. So I appreciate you for throwing that out there, Andy. Because
hey, bad luck has to happen. Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, true. No, say that.
Oh yeah, just bad routes sometimes have to happen, and it's never anything that I'm really proud of, but it's like, you know, like I'm heading, you know, I'm routing an artist from Washington to California, and then we get to middle of Oregon, and I'm like, oh, I cannot find anything south of Oregon, but like, you know, I can find something like in Northern California on the day after I need it, so I'll take that, and then I'll book them, you know, like 5 hours east, and then they just have to drive another 5 hours south. It's never anything that I'm proud of, but it's just it do be like that sometimes.
Oh yeah, definitely.
And shout out
even with that, there's a go ahead.
Oh, shout out those venues that let us book shows on Mondays, Tuesdays, and Wednesdays. Thank you for what you do.
True indeed. You are a lifesaver. You are the goats. Yeah, that is true, but I mean, even in that, even in a bad route, there's a rhyme and reason to it that I don't think many people understand. Because just understand that there's a rhyme and reason to why things are routed. If you have a person that understands what routing truly means, because I don't always believe people do understand how to truly route a tour. Because just the idea of the budget, just the gas budget alone.
Yeah.
Like just understanding that part, because understand people that there's all these things you have to consider when you go on the road that are going to cost you money. And so usually most touring acts don't make very much money because the tour itself just costs so much money to make happen. But hell, I mean, I can say that for myself. Like most of my tours, I didn't make money on the tour side. I made money on the merch side because of
exactly
just what the tour costed to make go. But at least I understood, I understood how to make the money I was making basically financially cover what the routing costed me. And so that's a whole other thing that, you know what, that's something you need to pay for, or you need to hire somebody to do for you. So yeah, a few things I'll say that you should pay for, especially when you're first starting. When you're first starting out when you haven't toured before, you should buy on a tour. You should technically, in my opinion, you should buy on three. But you need to – now, this is a mistake that I made. You need to understand the artist you're going on the road with based on, does that person's fan base fit the fan base you would want to have? Is their crowd your crowd? That was a mistake that I made when I first went out. Because if you don't, you're actually defeating your purpose, because you're not growing a base, and you're putting a lot, we're talking about thousands of dollars you're putting in, and you're not growing a fan base. You also want to make sure the artist is competent so you can actually learn what it means to be on tour, because there's a lot of guys that I will say, like your first tour, you should just go on tour just to figure out if that's the life for you, because tour life is tedious as
fuck. Like, it's mm-hmm. it's work. It's not as glamorous. It's really work. You'll find out if you want to be a musician. So that's the second thing you need to do, is just figure out if this is the life you want to live, and are you touring with someone that's actually competent in touring, so you can learn good habits while you're on the road. Because I've also seen that there's a lot of guys that just have terrible, terrible road habits, and that affects you. You know, when you get into, say, if you're blessed to do a 20 or 30 city, 40 city tour, when you get to like show 15, 16, 17, those bad habits start catching up. There's that. And third but not least, you want to go on the road with someone who can actually show you the real ropes and introduce you and tell you who to talk to, who not to talk to, you know, those kind of things, because that matters too.
Right.
Because you can't associate with everybody, and you cannot do business with everyone. It will kill you in the long run. So those are three mistakes that I'll say that I made, but they were rookie mistakes and I didn't know no better. So hopefully your learning curve can come faster than mine.
Listen to us. We're all in our 30s, man. If there are any younger artists out there, please take what we are saying like as much as you can. Just soak that in, because I've made all the rookie mistakes that there are possible to make. I didn't have a mentor to say, hey, this isn't how shows work, you know, and then it took me years to make those mistakes to where, oh, you're right. They, you know, I wish somebody had told me this, you know, 10 years ago. Where would I be now if I had that advice now?
I did 19 years of working on big rigs and trailers and stuff, and I feel exactly the same way. And there's been plenty of times, you know, 10, 15 years in, it's like, why does anybody tell me that you could just do this? And that solves that. That fixes that issue. Like, that, you know, just save myself an hour and a half from doing it how I normally would have, or something, you know, just dumb shit.
Mm-hmm. Now, and I do want to go back to something here. Like, when you were talking, you know, you were asking about the promoter's role. So you talked about buying on to tours. That is perfectly acceptable in the music industry when you are up and coming, because it gives you the experience.
Right.
It lets you actually see, you know, the world outside of your hometown and to experience a new market. Now, I want to go back to when you had asked me, you know, what is the role of a promoter? If a promoter tells you that you need to sell X amount of tickets before you start to get paid, fuck them, that promoter. Please don't ever buy on a slot to open up for a big name, because I'm just going to be real. 90% of the time, you know, let's say, you know, a promoter says, hey, do you want to open up for Spice One? You just have to sell 20 tickets, and every ticket you sell after that, you get a dollar. That's a scam. That means the promoter doesn't have the money to pay Spice One, and that they want you to pay for it. Now, with that said, let's say you sell all 20 of those tickets. Cool. You got all your friends and family to go come to see you at a show. But those people who are there to see Spice One are not there to see you, so they're going to be at the bar. They're going to be outside smoking. It does not benefit you. Now, if you're getting paid to open up for Spice One, that's another story.
You beat me to my next question, but you are glorious. That is glorious that you said it that way. And that's what I mean about knowing you can't do business with everyone, and everyone is not in it for the right reasons. And
amen.
Some of the most arrogant, I will believe, promoters are those type of people. But
right.
What I'll say is, and this is how you can identify them, because what they're going to do is they're going to belittle you, like, you need to step your game up. You're a clown because you can't afford it, and you're broke, and that's why you can't make it. So because you have to learn how to identify these people, and that's the hardest thing about, I'll say, in the hip-hop world, the hardest thing is identifying who's the scammer. Because mm-hmm. there's more scammers than anything else.
And I know I'm pissing people off by saying this, but it's true. There's just more scammers in hip hop music right now than anything else. And
yeah,
a majority of them are so-called promoters, but yep, they're always going to make you feel like shit.
I think that goes on to what you've said before, Jesse, is that every time you look around now, there's, you know, somebody's there's another rapper. You know, everybody's rapping. So
yeah, that's true.
I think that probably kind of goes hand in hand into the fact that there's a lot of scamming going on because there's a lot of blow up in that genre right now. Everybody's trying to get into that genre and make a name for themselves. So
I hate to be that guy, but hip hop is the easiest form of music to make. Now, with that said, it is not the easiest form to make well. There are hundreds of thousands of shit, probably millions by now, shitty rappers out there. And those are the ones that maybe are tech savvy enough that they know how to boost their, you know, Spotify plays up. But that doesn't make them good at what they do. It doesn't make them professional at what they do. That's putting on an act. That's just, And it
Absolutely.
Sucks to say that because it's not easy. It's not easy to make good hip hop music. It's just, you could rip a beat from YouTube. You get a condenser microphone from, you know, Best Buy, and then boom, you've got, you know, you can just make a track, you know, using Audacity or whatever, you know, free online program that you have.
You don't got to hate to be that guy. That's true. So don't hate to be that guy. That's just being honest.
Now, do you find there's a genre that you prefer, you know, booking for or anything like that, or?
I guess the easiest genre for me, just because I'm from the Pacific Northwest, I guess it comes hand in hand. It's like indie rock punk. I mean, there's no shortage of punk bands. There's no shortage of indie rock bands. I do dabble in a little bit of metal, but honestly, that's not really my genre of choice. Like, you know, learning the differences between, like, you know, hardcore, post-hardcore, deathcore. You know, I had to figure that out over time because this is not my genre, but from time to time I'd get, you know, a deathcore band hitting me up, and then I booked the show and they're like, hey, you put us on the bill with a post-hardcore band. And I'm like, so, and like, now I know, like, it can work. It doesn't always work. But yeah, my preferred genres are indie rock and punk. That's mostly what I listen to. I mean, I grew up on West Coast gangster rap for the most part, but, over time, you know, when I was, you know, beginning promoting, you know, I started out booking only hip hop shows, and then it sort of came to, hey, we're a touring punk band and we, you know, we want to play Olympia. And I was like, well, I'll try. I'll see what I can do. And that's when I started going to more shows, like local shows, because I only went to hip hop shows because, I mean, that was just what I did. But then I started going to more indie shows, going to more house shows, and, you know, just talking to people, making those connections and, you know, asking questions and, you know, finding out who the hot bands are in Olympia and, you know, just teaming them up with, you know, with touring bands and seeing what magic I can make happen. And also, like, working at McMenamin's, I can say that I enjoy working with tribute bands, which is odd for me to say because 2 years ago I would have said, like, I would never book a tribute band. But nowadays I'm like, oh, yeah, you know, you're, you know, a tribute band for Aerosmith, you know. The older, you know, the 60-plus crowd is going to love this. Like, I may be in my 30s. I know that there's a younger crowd that likes to go to hip-hop shows and to indie shows, but there's also a 60-plus crowd that I've never tapped into. So now I pretty much feel like I'm on all levels. I can book a show that can cater to a 60-plus crowd, a 50-plus crowd, 40-plus crowd, 30-plus crowd, you know, as, you know, even like, you know, we throw daytime shows that are for, you know, children where I work. So there's that going for me as well. And it also branches out to non-music type events like burlesque shows or drag shows. I've dipped my toes into a lot of these puddles.
Okay. All right. Nothing wrong with, you know, expanding your repertoire.
Exactly. I mean, that's what it comes down to. You can't do the same thing every day. I think that's what I really learned by booking only hip-hop shows for as many years as I did. I was shorting myself. I was shorting my community. There are thousands of genres of music. Why not expand and, you know, meet new people?
Absolutely, so, man.
And don't be afraid to mix genres, because people might not believe it, but hip-hop and rock, hip-hop and house, it goes together. Some of my dopest shows were that's the shows we're doing now, is the variety shows. So don't be afraid to tap into other genres of music, because especially the dope thing about listeners now, true music lovers now, they have an ear for everything. So you would be surprised. Like, if you looked at my playlist, I know my friends hate when I get the aux, because yeah, you're gonna get your hardcore hip hop, but then there's always that, and I pride myself in it. Like, what the fuck are you listening? I pride myself into that statement. What is this? Like, bro, just trust me. Like, it's just listen, because I'm big on songwriting at this point. I don't know, like, I've always been intrigued by how they put the song together. So, like, don't be afraid to mix genres. Don't be afraid to reach out to a rock band or a house DJ. Don't be afraid. You would be shocked the opportunities that will open up for you. And,
you know, I want to add on that. Do you know who Carnage the Executioner is?
Oh yeah, he's an animal. He's in a class all by itself.
Dude, out of every hip-hop artist, I've been going to hip-hop shows since I was 15, so that's well over 18 years of my life, and I've never seen any rapper do what he does on stage. He is hands down the best live performer I've ever seen in my life, and I have every honor to say, hey, I'm his booking agent when he comes to the Pacific Northwest. When he comes over here to Washington, he hits me up and says, hey, I've got 7 dates in Washington. Where should I go? And I can route him. And the one thing I pride myself in doing is that I don't book him with other artists, hip-hop artists. I mean, maybe from time to time, like, I'll book, like, a hip-hop opener, but I'll book a band and sandwich him in between two bands, because what he does can be appreciated by anybody who's just a lover of music. Like you said, you know, nowadays, you know, we have Spotify to actually, like, really help us, or just, like, you know, streaming services in general. We have access to all these genres, and people know what they like. People will listen to it if it's good music, no matter the genre. And that's why I, you know, like, my favorite show that I've ever hosted in my life was at, it was a house show in Bellingham. I drove up from Olympia to Bellingham with Terrell, Carnage the Executioner. I wish I remembered the name of the house. It'll come to me. But the best show I ever threw, we had Lipstitch headline, and we had Porch Cat open, and it was so cool. Like, it was like femme punk band, Carnage the Executioner in the middle, and just watching this, you know, this house full of like 40 college kids just go fucking nuts, because they were expecting, you know, some rapper out of St. Paul. That's all they knew about him. And then they're like, oh, punk band. Oh my God, the greatest rap set I've ever seen in my life. And then ending off with another punk band. Branch out, people.
And I appreciate you not doing, but please never, because just, okay, listen, hip hop / rapper friends. I've never met Carnage the Executioner, but I will tell you, that is a fucking hard act to follow. What he has the lane he's carved out for yourself, and I pride myself in being a pretty fucking awesome rapper. That is a very hard act to follow. Just in the organic creativity of what he does, you know. And I'm not ashamed to give someone props, but Andy, you are a gentleman for not serving up any rappers to drown in that situation.
Right. And I don't want anybody to feel that way, I don't want anybody to feel that way, but I mean, like you said, what he does is not traditional in the hip hop world. So for anybody who's not familiar with Carnage the Executioner, look him up on YouTube. He is the most amazing beatboxer you will ever see, hands down. I promise it. I've been going to hip hop shows for 18 years. He does the best performance out of any hip hop artist I've ever seen in my life. Long before I was his agent, I drove up to Seattle to see DJ Abilities at the Nectar Lounge. I didn't know anything about Carnage the Executioner other than his name was on the flyer with Sammy Warmhands. Shout out Sammy, by the way. But I mean, I saw that set and I was just like, this isn't real. This isn't happening, is it? Like, the way he beatboxes and he uses pedals to, like, loop pedals and, you know, like guitar pedals to, like, change his voice and to create a beat and just loops over it and loops over it. And he does, like, covers and he mixes in his own originals. I've seen him perform at least 15 times since that time. Every performance is different and unique. And he'll flip any track. He'll flip a Kendrick Lamar track, a Dr. Dre track. You know, he's the most versatile hip-hop artist I've ever seen in my life.
So what do we learn today, friends? Creativity. But here's the dope thing about I don't know what the question was, but the direction we went in. The one thing we learned today is don't be afraid to be creative. Don't be afraid to be different. Because a lot of us are so afraid to do something that the homies might not think it's cool. And we're talking about an artist who just maybe, I mean, probably that's just his thing, but it's a very creative take on what we would call, I don't even know if you would call it hip-hop. It's just a very creative take on attacking music. And mm-hmm. I think a lot of us need to be okay with, like, this is me. This is what I'm doing. Because I know when I first started, there was a lot of ideas I had that I let other people tell me were fucking stupid, which is crazy now when I think about it. I wish I could go back and talk to that guy. Like, just tell him, fuck you, and keep doing what you're doing. but please, don't be afraid to be different. I mean, because as long as it's quality, as long as it's well thought out and well put together, because, like, going back to what Andy said, it's easy to make rap music, but it's not easy to make good rap music or good hip hop. So I think that's the biggest testament to what we're saying about Carnage or anyone like Carnage. He's original, and that originality and that uniqueness is basically making him legendary.
Mm-hmm.
And that's my TED talk on that. But
I think we ought to do a couple more songs.
Read my mind.
Give ourselves a little breather here, and then we'll come back, keep talking. What do you guys think?
Sounds good to me.
I got a couple songs I want to play just because I haven't heard them in a while, and I want to hear them. And it's, you know, mine and Jesse's party, and we can do what we want. So let's see here. This first one is going to be Chad Bearden, and this song is called Sober. And then I think I'm going to do some catechize after that. So we'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen. Stick with us. And here we go.
One too many. I really must have turned them up. Must have been going hard on something in a paper cup. That's the only way I can explain where I'm at right now. I must have really been throwing them down, 'cause I never would have done it sober. Never would have said it's over. I never would have spoke a word that broke your heart. Could I do it so our world
never would have done it so. I could blame it on the jack, pin it on the Cuervo, but surely I was sipping on some hell I don't know. Wish I could find some bad excuse to explain what I did to you, cause I never would have done it sober. I never would have said it sober. I never would have spoke the words that broke your heart. Good or I flew and tore our world apart. Tomorrow I know I'll wake up hungover, but I never would have turned this over. No, I never would have turned it over. I know it will all come rolling back, but right now I can't recall a damn thing. Cause I never would have done it sober. Never would have said it sober. I never would have spoke the words that broke your heart. Could I do it to our world apart? Tomorrow I know I'll wake up hungry. Cause I never would have done it sober. Never would have done it so. I must have had one too many. I really must have turned it up.
Pushing, working hard, no one ever handed me nothing ever for the fame, only for the family. They watching every move I'm making, I know they can't handle me. Never drink or go to parties, I got moves to make. I'm just starving for success, it's like I'm losing weight. And while everybody out here arguing about who's the great, I'ma keep my face, say my grace, and I'ma lick the plate. Everyone's given a talent, the problem is most of them going just wasted, using excuses, you basic face it. I can have the dreams, you just chase it. They spend their money on clothes, I spend my money on goals. They surround themselves with their bros, I surround myself with the pros.
We've been through the fires about the unknown, and this time we are not alone. We're seizing this life, making it our own. We're taking
I told them that they need to find a new dentist, cause nobody gonna supply them with crowns. They've been trying to drill out of my wisdom, but they cannot brace what I'm doing right now. You gotta be kidding me, most you cats, you ain't even trying. You claim me the main king of the jungle, but I know that most you lie. See, I'm just trying to show my son that life is just an obstacle, but if you got God on your side, then anything is possible. If you keep on pushing, working hard, you'll be phenomenal. And you your daddy's son, you became boy, you're unstoppable.
We've been through the fires of the unknown, and this time we are not alone. We're seizing this life, making it our own home. We're taking the throne.
Snakes, they bite lines, they python. When they write songs, I'm an icon. When the mic's on, I'm Tyson. When I beat up the beat, put the ice on. Hit them with the rhythm I rely on. Never see defeat, that's for nylons. They cool with losing, I think they price gone. I'm working and building an audience. They just keep looking for parties and partying, covering low self-esteem with that cockiness. I know the curve and intention is obvious. Whoa! Never drink or go to parties, I got moves to make. I'm just starving for success, feels like I'm losing weight. And while everybody out here arguing about who's the great, I'ma keep my faith, say my grace, and I'ma lick the plate.
We've
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Note by Note Radio Show. It is I, your host, Jay Boogie, with me broadcasting from his home studio. It is my boy, Jesse Lives, and we have Andy on the line tonight with us. Man, just want to let everybody know, if you haven't already, please go check out Catechize. Go check out his pages. Follow him along. Chad Bearden, do the same thing. We've had both those artists on this show before. Chad was actually the very first show that ever happened. You know, yes, he's my cousin, and yes, he was my go-to for my first show, so that's what I did.
Name drop. That's the coolest name drop ever. Yes, he's my cousin. Yes, he's my go-to. You got to love it.
Yeah. Like, this is no shit. Like, he just dropped a song. He just dropped a song that several bigger I think Pitbull was a part of it, and fucking Aaron Lewis had a hand in it. I'd have to look up to get the details or whatever, but it's fucking amazing. So you know, I'm he's gonna put the beard name on the map. I'm just waiting by my time, you know, because he's fixing to blow the fuck up. I hope, anyways. You know, I hope.
That's well, just me. He's putting out songs like Sober. Like, hey.
Oh, yeah.
Dude.
No,
he
the one he just
that.
Dropped is the one he just dropped is absolutely amazing. It's called Whiskey Anymore, and it is awesome. And I'll tell you, I didn't listen to a lot of country for a long, long time because, you know, I mean, I just grew up on, like, late 80s, 90s country, you know, and that's just like what I have as a mind frame as country music. So, you know, in the 2000s and stuff, let's say, you know, 2005 and on to maybe probably 2015 or something like that. You know, I just, there wasn't really nothing, you know, and I hadn't even talked to Chad in a long time. And then Chad hit me up one day and says, "Hey man, I'd seen him at a show because it had been years and years and years since I'd seen him. Seen him at a show. I was doing some classes in Nashville for the company I worked for. And me and a few guys went out and seen him and stuff. And I made a joke, hey, man, if you ever buy a tour bus, I'll fucking come drive it. And sure enough, like 2 years later, hey, man, I just bought a tour bus. Do you still want to drive it? So, yeah, and that's how I reconnected with him. And, you know, I fucking... You know, he got me listening to country music again. And it has nothing to do with the fact that he's my cousin. You know, I mean, I listen to it because he's my cousin. But my getting back into actually listening to it and stuff like that and giving a shit about it, it was because of his and a song that he did back before he got, with the band and, you know, how he runs now. He just runs as Chad Bearden, you know, and he's got a group of people that ride with him. Some of them kind of interchange every once in a while if they've, you know, got other things that are going on. But for the most part is, you know, his little clique, you know, it's the same crew all the time. Anyways, that was a long ramble about my cousin, and I do apologize. But, you know, he's out there. He's actually in Vegas working this weekend. So, you know, props to him. If you're out in Vegas, you know, go hit him up if you can. Absolutely awesome show.
That's crazy that's I don't hear country music when I hear Sober. That's the weirdest thing. I didn't even think country music at all.
How do you not hear country?
It definitely has like notes of country, but I definitely classify it as like indie.
I don't know, because like, okay, so growing up, like, I heard a lot of different – that's one thing my parents did privilege us to. And my mom was a big fan of country music. So – and she put me on country music, and she's always say, listen to the words. Listen to the songwriting. So that's how I learned. So it is a weird thing. So that – so when I hear country – like, and I've noticed country music has changed, you know, mm-hmm. over the years, but – there was a time where, you know, where you were pretty much the best written songs were, you know, country music and pop music before it became, and I'm talking about like Michael Jackson type pop music,
Lionel Richie type pop music, like that kind of stuff. Those are some of the best written songs before it became what it is now, like the cookie cutter version. So that's weird. Like, it's funny how, like, yeah, I just didn't hear country music. I just heard a well put together song because, like, I guess maybe because I can relate. I think we've all been in that fucking place where yeah, I wouldn't have been honest if I wasn't drunk right now.
So, right.
You know what? I never liked you, motherfucker. Like, or the other way around. Or, you know, I'm sorry I messed up. You know what I mean? Like, so that's how I see it. I hear more of a ballad. Like, no. Nah, like, I think I've experienced that emotion and been in that place. So that's why I didn't hear country. Because, you know, she broke my heart, so I broke her jaw. I didn't hear that. So,
you know, I think it was like 3 weeks ago or something like that. I posted a link on our page for his new song that's out. It's called Whiskey Anymore. So, and when it's really funny, I'll tell you this: Chad's never drank. So that's a little inside fact. Wow. You know, he's never fucking drank, and he didn't even have soda until he was in his 20s. He drank nothing but water. I mean, I'm sure as a child he had milk and, you know, juice and stuff like
juice.
That when he was little like that. But, you know, as he, you know, got older and started making his own, like he had nothing but water until he was in his 20s. So.
Hey, so his kidneys are strong.
Yeah, and he's never drank. He doesn't smoke. He was a fucking cop. He was a cop for like 15 years of his life. and my other cousin.
So he was a gang member for 15 years of his life?
Yeah. No. his little brother just became the chief of police in his town down in Alabama.
Yeah, that's different.
Yeah.
So he's a gang leader in Alabama. That's a whole other show, but if we're being honest, like
I tell you, you know, and he held every office like in his department, like he patrolman, you know, he was on special units, he was on he was a detective at one point, you know, so yeah, actually I reconnected with him when my biological father died, so his uncle. And walked into the funeral home and there was my two cousins all grown up and, one, you know, in a suit with a badge on his belt and the other one in a patrolman's, uniform, the younger brother. And I was like, yeah, great. It's fucking place full of cops. It's wonderful.
You should have seen it. It would jump you in, bro.
Yeah.
So actually, this leads us to one of our favorite questions. So Andy, doing what you do, what is the wildest experience that you've had in the industry so far? Like the craziest story of them all. Yeah, like the craziest thing where you were just like, okay, I didn't see that coming.
Oh man, I'll do my best to do this without saying names.
Yeah, you leave the names out of it. That's fine. Just give us the rundown of the story.
You know, it was Indigenous Peoples Day the other day, so happy Indigenous Peoples Day. So let's start out there because it happened on this day. A musician who was in a band. I can't believe I'm telling this story on here. Okay, so a musician in this band is on Facebook saying things like, I don't care that it's Indigenous Peoples Day. I mean, we conquered them. You know, he's a white guy. He's like, we defeated them and we stole their land. Who the fuck cares, you know? And he's like, he said something along the lines of, Christopher Columbus might have, and, you know, excuse my language here. I am Native American also. I'm Mexican, German, and Native American. So, with a bunch of stuff where I don't know. I'm like quite the mutt here. So he says something like, you know, maybe Christopher Columbus killed a bunch of Indians, used the word Indians, but he at least sailed around the world, and that's pretty cool. And I blew the
fuck up on him on his social media. And I screencast what he said, and I'm just like, yo, don't book this guy in Olympia. And I blasted him. And rather than him apologizing, like I feel like people say dumb shit that they don't mean, but you can redeem yourself if you apologize and acknowledge. I mean, I'm guilty of it. I'm sure – I don't know if y'all are guilty of it, but, you know, we say things that we –
are
funny.
Plenty of dumb shit.
Yeah, we say things that we think are, you know, funny or whatnot, you know, and, you know, we apologize for it. We learn from our mistakes. I mean, there was a time in our lives when it was okay to say that's gay, and it wasn't until somebody said, "Yo, don't say that to me," and I was like, "Oh yeah, you're right. There's nothing wrong with being gay." So there was that incident. So this dude says this, you know, about Christopher Columbus on Indigenous Peoples Day, mind you. So I blew the fuck up. Everybody in Olympia is just commenting like, you know, fuck you, dude. Like, what the fuck's wrong with you? So he messages me personally to say, hey, man, it's fucked up that you screen capped that quote that I made. And, you know, everybody's mad at me now because of you. And I'm like, no, you did this on yourself. So that's not the weirdest part of the story, though. The weirdest part of the story is months go by. I'm talking maybe 3-4 months. And I wake up. To, you know, I see some post that's like, wow, I can't believe this guy, you know, actually played at my house. You know, like Olympia's a big house show scene. So somebody had written like, oh, wow, I can't believe this guy actually played at my house. I can't believe this. And I'm like, oh, what did he do this time? So I decided to go onto his Facebook, and I see a song that he wrote and posted called Andy's Shit. And it's a terrible rap song. Like, dude does not know how to keep tempo. Does not know how to – has never rapped in his life and decided, I'm going to write a diss song to this dude. My biggest regret was not downloading it. That was my biggest regret because it was up online for like 6 months. But, like, I shared it and everybody was just like, wow, this guy is awful, like awful musician. And he was just – yeah, he was just like trying to make fun of me and in the end result just made fun of himself. So I – it's not the first time I've ever been dissed because I used to rap, you know, like that's what rappers do. They diss each other. But this was the first time since like I stopped making music that somebody was like, oh, this promoter outed me as a racist. So you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to write a rap song about him. It was the corniest thing I've ever heard in my life. And I couldn't believe that it happened. Like, you know, just the reaction of my community really showed me how much I'm like cared about in my community, because everybody was like, wow, like you really pissed off this dude and this racist dude at that. Never heard from him again since.
Well, I would hope not.
my $1 million question is always, why do you go the most ethnic route you can find when you're openly racist? Like that always blows my mind. You pick the most ethnic route you can find. Like, why is it always the rap route you go? Like, if you don't like ethnic, because I'm just going to say ethnic people. If you don't like people with any culture outside of European culture, why do you go the most non-European route to diss somebody musically? I've never understood that. I don't understand the psychosis of, I just, like, There should be just a special word for that level of ignorance. Like, how, like, what alternative universe do we live in where that oxymoron makes sense?
Right.
All the ways you can go. Like, I mean, I'm sure you can cuss somebody out over a rock song, can't you? I mean, I don't know if it's ever been done. I mean, I'd have to do my research, but I never understand why people try to go the rap route and they do it horribly when they go. So doesn't that, like, add – I feel like that's even more racist if we want to talk about racism. Like, right? Because you're just going to – you're going to butcher the most colorful thing in music. You're just going to butcher that too. So, damn.
Hey, there was a point when rock and roll music was all black music, and then it wasn't until white people stole that, you know, it became like a more, you know, notoriously a white genre, which – I don't know if it's developed into that in hip hop. I hope that it hasn't, but you know, I mean, don't get me wrong. I like white rappers, but
I hate it when white rappers don't acknowledge the history behind it. Or like, you know, like they're your Tom McDonald's. I'll even throw Kid Rock in the ring. Like, what the fuck are they doing? Like rapping about like, I love America, but I'm also a rapper, and you know, fuck BLM, and like, what? But so then you don't know the roots of the genre that you're getting into. How do you not know your history to that extent?
Yeah, but you know, like I said, there's got to be a special word for that level of ignorance.
Yeah,
I don't know, man. Like, I don't know.
Hold on.
I just started. You see how you can't even find the words now? There's just certain things that I've had to learn. Just you can't even pay it no mind because there's no. You'll never make it make sense to that person that you're defeating your purpose. And then as there's that age old saying, if you argue with an idiot from a distance, who's the idiot? Who looks like the idiot? You know what I'm saying? So those things I won't get. But I mean, I'll say this. There's this rapper that I know one time, and this should have been my ultimate red flag. And this is what I take from guys like that, that told me to my face, I don't give a fuck about the culture. I'm in it for the money. Now, it went over my head at the time, but I think genuinely that's the attitude. This is something I can exploit, so I'm exploiting it. Don't do it. It's okay as long as I'm doing it to you. And if we're breaking that down, that's kind of the American way, you know. So it's cool as long as I'm fucking you and shitting on your culture. But God forbid you say anything about mine. So maybe it's just that's the entitlement of that mentality.
You know, to me, I just find it wild that we're still having to deal with that shit, you know, in this day and age, you know, in 2022, we're still dealing with shit, you know, that we've been dealing with for hundreds of years, you know, racism and everything. Like, at some point, to me, in my mind, enough is a fucking enough. You know, let's get over this whole black, white, brown fucking, you know, thing. Like, you know, let's move all past that shit and just understand that, you know, we're all people. We're all just trying to, you know, make it through this life, you know, and doing the best we can. And it boggles me because I was never raised. And I was raised in a very, very predominantly black neighborhood that was very dangerous. And, you know, it was the hood of where, you know, in Bradenton, Florida, Onico. That's the hood. That's it. That's all it is.
Okay, let's keep it honest. Florida itself is the hood. Like, Florida's like a second home to me. Just Florida as a state is the hood. Let's just keep it funky.
Well, yeah, I mean, generally, if you're going to the hood, you're going to Florida. You know, that's, you know, if you're talking about like a countrywide thing. But like I was, you know, and my parents raised me to, you know, just to love everybody. You know, and, you know, I had friends that would, you know, use the N-word and stuff like, and I would yell at them and get on them like, dude, like, don't say that shit around me. I'm not, you know, like, even after people, I had a black guy stole the lock to my bike, didn't steal my bike, which is far more valuable, but but he stole the lock, you know, and even then, like, that didn't, like, it didn't make me say, oh, well, you know, screw that whole, you know, the whole race as a people. You know what I'm saying? Like, I hate that motherfucker. If I ever see that motherfucker again, you know what I'm saying? I'll whip his ass, you know?
Right.
Because I'm not a scared little kid anymore. But I can't find that in my heart, in my soul, to hate a general population of people, you know? Like, you know, when the Twin Towers came down, you know, everybody jumped on that bandwagon of hating, you know, Middle Eastern people and stuff like that. I hate them motherfuckers. I hate them motherfuckers that planned it and followed it through and that, you know, led it and whatever, you know. Yeah, fuck them. I'll shoot them bastards. Has nothing to do with that country, those countries as a whole, or that people as a whole, you know. And people cannot separate the two. Because there's bad apples in every bunch, period.
Exactly.
Hell, 99% of fucking serial killers are white. You know?
Mm-hmm.
You know? Dahmer motherfuckers that eat people. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's white people shit. Like, you know, there's so it fucking kills me that people can still act like that, you know, in this day and age, you know?
Yeah. Well, there's no consequence. I think that's with anything, just even if we take the racial part out of it, I just think when people know they can move without any, because we, especially now, we live in a time where getting punched in the mouth isn't as normal as it used to be.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? So when you, people bully when they, and it's weird because it was a conversation, actually some kids that one of my organizations mentor, we were having a discussion about this yesterday. And if you think about the what a bully is, it's someone who moves in a way that they know the repercussion. There's no repercussion for what they do. And I think that's what that is with a lot of things. You have so many people that have been able to get away with stuff like that for so long without a real response, because like if we really knew history, and this is why so much history is lied and reworded, and so so let's go back to the race thing. When we hear about slavery, we never really hear about the slaves that revolted. We never hear about the Native Americans who fought back. So
yep.
we forget there was a Native American America. There was a Native and American war, and the American side was losing for a long time. But with that, so what is that? That's rebellion. Should we have the Seminoles are named after it. So, and there's many other stories where we never hear about the indigenous people who fought back. It's always
right.
The oppression part. You see what I'm saying? And that's how the story gets told no matter what. So if I think I can do something and there's never going to be a real response, there's never going to be a real repercussion, or I don't know the history of the repercussion, I'm going to do it because I can. And that's what small people do. And that's what I really feel like it is. If you really thought you were going to get the dog shit stomped out of you for saying certain things, you wouldn't say it. And like, because I know when I was a teenager, there was just shit you was going to get your ass whooped over, period. And it was whichever one of us caught you first. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah, we didn't have the level of social media that we do now back then. So if we talked shit, it was to somebody's face and you would have gotten your ass whooped. I mean, nowadays you can hide behind a keyboard and bully all you want because it makes people feel powerful somehow.
I think that's what goes over on you just because they are online. You can't do nothing to them directly, you know.
Yeah.
You know, nowadays, you know, you come over to somebody's house or whatever, hell, they lock the door, they call the cops, hell, you're going to jail because you're the aggressor. No matter what they said online, you came over to their house and tracked them down to whip their ass. You're the aggressor. You're going to jail, you know. But if you're standing toe-to-toe with somebody, and talking fucking shit, you know, it's hard to sit there and say, you know, who's the aggressor in the situation. If you're both sitting there talking shit and then, you know, somebody reaches down and grabs their nutsacks and throws a fucking punch and lays you the fuck out, you know, you were antagonizing. You were in their fucking, you're right in their face. You're, you know, in their space, you know. So,
but we're missing that now. That's the time. Society is missing that because I'm from the Bay Area. I'm from San Jose, California, born and raised. If you know anything about the people who know that this is a melting pot here. So I had friends from my closest friends growing up weren't the same color as me. So shoot, my like in junior high school and like in high school, my closest friend was Mexican, and he would swing on you for calling me out of my name faster than I would. We don't have that anymore community wise. That's why we have so much of that going on. You see what I'm saying? Because like, even if a person is saying
when I'm around,
what's up?
I said, let somebody say something to you when I'm around.
That's my point. But as a society, we don't have that anymore. Because you shouldn't have to correct that person. The person that knows that person should be correcting that person.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have that. We don't have community like that anymore. Like, and we see it as like a race thing, but no, like our, we fail as communities now to keep ourselves in check. Because I know Mrs. Hurley would have whipped my ass and told my mom why she whipped my ass. She got me, and she didn't get no more loca than anyone else. You see what I'm saying? She had the big hair and everything. typical Mexican woman, old school, like the big hair, everything, big makeup, all of that. She treated me like when I was there. She treated me like one of her children. We don't have that community right now. We've lost that sense of it, to where you know I can just judge you for you. Like I know Andy. Because think about it. You don't even realize that you might, like, you're different until someone tells you that you're a different race. Because most of the kids, I didn't even understand racism. Kids taught me racism. I just knew that was Eddie. That was Mike. That was Chris. I didn't know the other side until other kids brought it into the mix.
Yeah, I went to a high school that was mostly white kids. Yeah, I went to a mostly white high school. So, yeah, it wasn't until like people were like, wow, you're so tan, or just, you know, or hearing my dad ramble about the white man did this, or, you know, yeah.
Stupid white people. God, we ruin everything. That's why we fuck up a lot of shit, man. There was some good shit going on in this country, and then the white man came over and fucked everything up. Well, we've got just under 4 minutes left here, Andy. I want to give you your time to promote any shows that you've got coming up. Push out your socials and stuff. So if you want to take this time right now to get all out, this is the time for it, my friend.
Okay, cool. We'll start out with the socials. Like I would. You know what sucks is, like, when people ask me, like, oh, what cool shows are coming up, I have to literally pull out my phone and be like, let me look at the calendar, because I have no idea. Like, I'm in the zone when I book. Like, I can't just, like, be like, oh, I know the perfect show for you. I have to, like, look at my calendar. But anyways, to plug myself, at Cap City Presents, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, you can find out about me, all my shows that are coming up. I book shows all up and down the West Coast, mainly, primarily in Washington and Oregon. But yeah, like I said, at Cap City Presents, also capcitypresents.com. Or you can follow me on Instagram at Remex360 as well. But Cap City Presents is more my business, the business that I want to advertise. I really don't want to promote any shows just because it's all online. Like I could go down a list, but you know, I think that would just take too long. November 19th, if anybody in the Olympia area is listening, there's going to be a music summit that is presented by the South Sound Block Party, which was a music festival that just happened earlier this year. I am going to be on the panel along with Hunter Motto of the Crocodile with Evan of Alma Tacoma, with Roxy Boggio, my partner, also Kristen Green, Leigh Bezezikoff, I believe is her last name. And we're all just basically going to discuss how booking works. If you're in a band or if you're an independent artist and you're interested in booking shows, I recommend you save your spot because there are only 100 spots available on this panel. So that's November 19th, and that's at Olympia Lamplighters in downtown Ole. Hopefully I'll see you there. If you're dead serious about booking, I recommend signing up and RSVPing as soon as possible. Just, you can go onto the southsoundblockparty.com website, and you can find the link and just RSVP, and I hope to see you there.
Awesome.
Oh, and I want to add this last 2 cents. If you're reaching out to my guy, because I see Andy as one of my guys, and I vouch for him, talk to him nice and treat him respectfully. If you've learned about him through this show and my name comes up, I expect that from you. So please do. Talk to my guy nice.
Appreciate that, Jesse, man. Hey, thank you for letting me on the show, man. This has been awesome. I actually haven't been on an interview in over a year. So yeah, this is great. Thank you so much, man.
Oh, Andy, well,
thank you for coming, man.
Yeah, thank you so much for your time, man. It's a, you know, it was a great conversation, and it, we haven't had anybody like you on the show before, so it was a great insight into that aspect of the industry, you know, and what it's like. So, you know, and you know, it's the conversations. That's what me and Jesse do it for, man. It's always a good conversation, I think, you know, for, you know, the most part. But, you know, we have the last 10 seconds here, so I just want to leave you with this. Ladies and gentlemen, please, as always, keep your hearts open and your radios up. Have a good weekend, everybody.
Good night, y'all.